The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Welcome to Top 5, a show where we count things down from number 5 to number 1. That's what a top 5 show does. And this is Top 5. So we're here, and we're already doing it right.
And here, hanging from the rearview mirror, is a bloody hook.
This week's episode comes to us from one of our fantastic listeners, suggested Top 5 Urban Legends. Our Top 5 Urban Legends. This could go all over the place. And to prove it, I'm going to start off with my number 5, which has recently become my new favorite urban legend. The sea is salty because of whale sperm.
What?
Yes, according to this viral factoid, a blue whale produces more than 400 gallons of sperm when it ejaculates.
That is true.
No, it's not. But only a few gallons actually reach their intended target, which means that horny whales are filling the ocean with salty sperm. That is an urban legend, in fact.
Yeah, that tracks, yeah.
Yeah, in fact, a blue whale only produces at most, not 400 gallons of sperm, but 5 gallons of sperm.
Oh, well, that's an entirely different matter.
That is a totally different matter. So that is my number 5, which I found this like maybe a month ago. It just popped up. And I was like, what is this stuff? And it just started making me laugh. So that is my number 5. The sea is salty because of whale sperm.
Ugh.
Yeah. Matthew, what do you have for your number 5?
My number 5 is very, very important. And here is why. It's partly urban legend. It's partly just bad etymology. But when I was in college in, let's say, about 1992, 1993, this started making the rounds as a thing that don't ever say this because. Now, I appreciate and actually support the reasons why they say don't ever say this because, and no, it's not the C word, and no, it's not Bloody Mary into a mirror. It's actually the rule of thumb. And we were told that the rule of thumb states that in the reign of Charles the Habakov, the rule of thumb stated that you could beat people in your home with a stick so long as it was no larger than the diameter of your thumb. This is not true. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't say it because people still believe that that is the case. And when people believe that something is the case and you say it, you can still really tick people off. And it's best to, you know, stay away from those sort of morass situations. But apparently, and I looked this up today when we were talking about it, the belief in the rule of thumb is literally like 500 years old. It dates back to the 1700s, which is not 500 years ago, but stay with me, math is not my strong suit.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things that I keep hearing this, and I hear it repeatedly, and people repeat it almost mindlessly. If you say rule of thumb, someone will tell you,
you know what that means.
And I don't think I've really ever had anybody tell me that.
Really?
Except for Matthew. Have.
Yeah, maybe you don't hang out with Carl. But
of course,
I'd
never say rule of thumb, so.
Well, that's true. And, you know, it is a kind of a meaningless phrase. But there is no ancient law or doctrine ever on any books anywhere that states that terrible thing is true. However, that doesn't mean that you can't have people come at you and say, well, that's a reference to domestic abuse. And at that point you go, oh, well, sorry, that's not actually true. And then you get into a whole fight. Best to just avoid it. But it should be noted for future reference that that is, in fact, an urban legend. It is not specifically a reference to domestic abuse. However, it's still a dumb thing to say. So, you know, you got that going for you, which is nice.
All right. Thank you for that. Rodrigo, what do you have for your number five?
My number five was something that I it recently came back into my consciousness. I had read this story before, and then I recently got a job that includes taking donations from people.
Okay.
And every once in a while, somebody will donate like a really old looking piece of furniture or like a jewelry box or something. And like anytime I look at something like that, I'm like, I really hope there isn't a Dybbuk inside this. And I'm talking about the Legend of the Dybbuk Box, which you can find online. I think there's like a whole book written about it. And basically, it's like this lady from Poland got all the way through the Holocaust, moved to Spain, and then acquired this box that supposedly has this weird trickster, monster, demon spirit inside. And then someone else got it in an estate sale, and basically misfortune and big overt misfortune follows this box, and it is like super creepy. So anytime I come across anything like this, I just hand it to one of my less superstitious coworkers and be like, hey, this is a cool thing. Is it? Yeah, you look at, you open it. Yeah. I'm going to look at something else. because I'm actually secretly terrified of releasing some sort of, Dybbuk / Wishmaster / some other monstrosity that's been trapped in a filigreed box.
You never want to do that.
No.
Never.
No.
You never
avoid do. If possible.
Yes. If you want to find out more about that, go check out the 2012 movie called The Possession.
That's right. Possession is based on the Dybbuk box myth.
Yep. All right, we are through with our number fives. We are now on to our number fours. And this is one that popped up literally 2 days ago for me. And I was like, what? No way. And then I did some research and I found out, oh, boo, because the story is much more impressive than the
reality.
Yes. So apparently this has been going around. This is from an email from 2002. A dialogue from The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson with his guest Lee Marvin. Johnny's asking him about the fact that Lee Marvin was a Marine, landed at Iwo Jima, and during the course of the action, he earned the Navy Cross and was severely wounded. And Lee Marvin says, and you know how he goes, yeah, I got shot square in the ass, and they gave me the cross for securing a hotspot about halfway up the whatever it is, the Cerberachi. Bad thing about getting shot up on a mountain is guys getting shot hauling you down. But Johnny at Iwo, what does it say? But Johnny at Iwo served under the bravest man I ever knew. Oh, okay. I served under the bravest man I ever knew. We both got the cross the same day, but what he did for his cross made mine look cheap in comparison. The dumb bastard actually stood up on a red beach and directed his troops to move forward and get the hell off the beach. That sergeant and I have been lifelong friends. When they brought me off the beach, we passed the sergeant. And he lit a smoke and passed it to me lying on my belly on the cot. And he said, where'd they get you, Lee? Well, Bob, if you make it home before me, tell Mom to sell the outhouse. Johnny, I'm not lying. Sergeant Keeshan was the bravest man I ever knew. Bob Keeshan, you know him today as Captain Kangaroo. Now, that sounds incredible, that Captain Kangaroo would stand up and try to divert the shooting so that his fellow soldiers can get safely to where they need to be. And just by that, it's like, fantastic. Holy cow. And it was said on The Tonight Show. Well, not quite. It turns out that Bob Keeshan, Captain Kangaroo, enlisted a little bit too late to be able to go to Iwo Jima. And while he was in the military, he did not serve with Lee Marvin, and he did not attack Iwo Jima. And so that story is completely false. Also false. Uh-huh. Any rumors, and just kind of tying these two together, any rumors that Mr. Rogers was a badass Marine and had to wear sweaters to cover up the tattoos on his arm?
That he was like a sniper with most kills ever or something.
Yeah. So that is my number four. Captain Kangaroo was a war hero on Iwo Jima. Not true. But still, we thank him for his service and all soldiers for their service.
And for the ping pong balls.
Yes. Matthew, what do you have for number four?
My number four is almost into the realm of folklore, but then when you talk about an urban legend, really is folklore, and it's based on something that keeps coming up. The recurring motif of the Phantom Train.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the Phantom Toll Booth.
The Phantom Toll Booth. No,
yeah.
A Phantom Train. There are a lot of stories about the Phantom Train. My grandmother used to tell a story about a Phantom locomotive. But this one always fascinated me. A few years ago when I was working at a particularly boring job, I used to prowl Wikipedia to kill time. And I hit just a bunch of Wikipedia pages and I found out about Zilverpilen.
Yeah.
Zilverpilen, which is Swedish for, I believe, silver arrow, is the story of basically a haunted subway train. It's not a subway, actually. I believe it's an elevated train. But at the point in time that they were doing it in the 60s, all of Stockholm's trains were green. And they all had the same interior, save for one. Mm-hmm. There was one test train that was silver.
Yeah.
And it was slightly different in design and shape, and the doors were different than all the other trains. And they used this as a backup. And this is factually accurate. This train did exist, and they used it as a backup. But over the years, people started reporting seeing this train, this silver train, the Zilverpilen, showing up at places where they shouldn't be and showing up in the middle of the night and people getting on this train and never getting off.
They changed the toll while they were on board and they couldn't get off.
And people claimed that they got on the Zilverpilen and they were surrounded by kind of half phantom figures of people who may or may not exist. They're actually a version that claims that there is an abandoned ghost station somewhere in Stockholm that the Zilverpilen will stop at. And if you get off at that station, then you enter the realm of the dead and cease to exist. Only the dead get off at this station is how the story goes.
Yeah.
But it's just this lovely bit of agglomerated legend based on the fact that at one point they had one train that was a little bit different, but over the years it's apparently turned into this ongoing cool ghost story about the Zilverpilen and the ghost train.
And that's why I will never visit Scandinavia.
Yeah, you won't even visit the Scandinavian section of Worlds of Fun.
Hey, I go to IHOP.
Steven hasn't trusted blonde people since that first one movie with the telekinetic children back in the 60s. What they call that?
Village of the Damned.
Village of the Damned, yeah.
It doesn't take place in Scandinavia, though.
The Erickson twins freaked him out.
They are pretty creepy kids. So
yeah, they are.
I hope they took the silver train.
And that's why my number four is the Silver Train.
Rodrigo, what do you have for number four?
Silver Train.
My number four is interesting because it's an urban legend that kind of weirdly reinforces an actual law.
Okay.
In Utah, there is a national park called Escalante Petrified Forest.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly, if you take petrified wood home with you, you are subject to a curse.
I don't know where my parents got their petrified wood, but I'm pretty sure I've been cursed.
Yeah. So
if not for that, for something else,
I'm sure
this story kind of makes the rounds and appears because people hear about the curse. They go to this park. And they take the petrified wood, which you're not supposed to do. You're not supposed to remove anything from this place. It's illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people, you know, obviously they're not going to have like giant checkpoints in a national park. Well, I mean, they might, but this place is big enough that it's difficult. So people take it. And then bad luck happens to them and they mail it back to the park.
Mm-hmm.
They just put in a parcel and they send it back. And according to like the park rangers, they get like basically one a month back, more or less, where it's just like somebody says like, oh, I'm sorry, I stole this. I've had really bad luck.
I don't know if you're done with that story yet, but I've got a question on that.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't this a story made up by the park?
It's or
the curse was made up by the park?
Supposedly not.
Oh, okay.
Supposedly, from what I've read, the ranger or the people involved in the park are always like, why is any of this happening? Why do we have to like receive all these parcels with like fossilized stuff? It would make a lot of sense that it was made up by the park.
Yeah, because they can't afford to patrol it, so they make up this weird curse story.
Sure, sure.
And then they take care of themselves.
The problem with it is, though, is that it's also attractive. You know, we talked about the Dybbuk box, and like, people have specifically made orders on it. People want to buy that box and like test it out for themselves. Right. And it's the same thing with this. It's like people are like, I'm not worried about it. And then they specifically go there, specifically take the cursed petrified wood. And then later on, they're like, oh, no. Got to send this back. So it's probably like an ongoing like issue with them. If they did make it up, it might have backfired. Although in the end, I guess they're probably seeing more traffic through the park, and presumably there's some sort of toll here or there, so maybe they are making more money.
They have a display in their museum.
Yeah.
About it too. So.
Yeah, it's a point of interest, but I can't imagine that it's that big of a deal either way. I can't imagine that they're making that much more money because tourists are like, let's go to the haunted forest, and also, you know, there's the cost involved in like having somebody always be there and sign for packages full of, you know, stuff that was in the park to begin with.
Cool. All right, we are up to what, our number threes already?
Number three.
This one is a variation of a story that appeared first in The Vanishing Hitchhiker from way back in 1981, and it goes a little something like this. Two roommates at college, they've got a test the next day.
Oh, God.
And one of them, they both agree that they're going to study really hard that night, and they're going to cram so that they can do really good on this test. Well, one of the girls gets asked out to a party by a guy she really, 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 really likes. And the roommate's like, I really don't want to go to the party with you. Let's just stay here. And the girl says, you know what? I really want to try to make good with this guy. She goes off. The roommate stays home and crams for the test. She goes off and has a good time at the party. She comes back late, and she plans on cramming the next morning. But she goes back late, doesn't want to wake her roommate up, quietly goes into the room, gets into bed and goes to sleep, and everything's fine. She just assumes that her roommate has fallen asleep. Next morning, she gets up, wakes up a little bit late, sees her roommate is still in bed asleep, and goes over to shake her and wake her up, and she rolls her roommate over, and the roommate has had her neck slashed, and she's dead. She's been murdered. And then the roommate looks up on the wall, and written in the blood of her roommate is the phrase, "Aren't you glad you didn't turn on the light?" Meaning that the killer was in the room with her when she came back from the party. It's pretty creepy.
I hate those stories.
It's pretty creepy. There's a number of different variations on this. Like I said, this first started in The Roommate's Death by Jan Harold Brunvand.
Jan Harold Brunvand.
Like I said, in The Visiting Hitchhiker book in 1981. So go check that out. It's pretty creepy.
That whole book is a trip. I think I read
this when I was like 10 or 11 years old. Would have been 11 years old.
Yeah.
And even read some of the stories to my class during a Halloween or something like that. So this is a good one, and it keeps circulating. And I, you know, some kids at college will probably say, "Hey, you heard about the girl over at the other university, right? You don't want that to happen."
Yeah.
So maybe that's what I'll tell the students next time when there's a test coming up, and I'll tell it right around Halloween. Mm-hmm. So it's like, make sure you go out and party. Yeah, make sure you don't go out and party. Stay home and study.
Stay home and don't be stupid.
Safer in groups.
Yep.
All right. That is my number three. Matthew, what do you have for number three?
Picture it with me.
Okay.
London.
Oh.
In the year 1912.
Okay.
The White Star Line is about to send off their greatest achievement, the largest passenger liner ever made.
Uh-huh.
4 smokestacks, like 1,500 people. It's like 900 feet long and lots of other measurements as well.
A floating city.
The RMS Titanic.
Yeah.
And as it crossed
the
ocean.
It's unsinkable, right? The unsinkable Titanic?
Unsinkable.
Yeah.
So that's what somebody claimed.
Yeah.
And they crossed the ocean one night in April of 2012 on its maiden voyage.
Maiden voyage.
The Titanic struck an iceberg and went down at the head.
Oh, man.
And like 1,500 lives were lost.
I hope somebody had a warranty on that.
Almost immediately, people started speaking of my number three, the Titanic curse.
Okay.
This is the thing. The White Star Line had a practice of not christening their ships. And apparently the christening practice has some sort of a religious overtones. I don't know. You're getting the blessing of someone and you bust a bottle of thing across the way. I don't know how this works. But there are a number of legends that claim that the Titanic curse meant that the White Star Line didn't christen the ship properly. And so it was not protected from some sort of divine retribution. And one of the legends actually states that when the ship was built, it was given the number 390904, which when looked at in a mirror says no Pope. And because it was built in Ireland, in Belfast, allegedly, that this meant that the White Star Line was anti-Catholic. And that somehow they had brought down the literal wrath of God on the ship. And that is why the Titanic sank on its maiden voyage.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Now, it should be noted that the yard number of the Titanic was actually 400.
Not 666?
Not 666 or 390904.
What about but there 33 are, and a third?
There are a number of things rotating around this, claiming, you know, that there was a curse, that there were these terrible things. And, of course, there is the very important note of the novel Futility The Wreck of the Titan, which was 15 years earlier, featuring an ocean liner called the Titan, which strikes an iceberg just like the Titanic in the middle of the North Atlantic, just like the Titanic, which has just ridiculous parallels to the ship. The actual design of the fictional ship is described as unsinkable. It has the same sort of propeller design. It's described as having a shortage of lifeboats, just like the actual Titanic. It's a fascinating thing. And people say, you put this all together, it's a premonition. That man knew because somehow he was tied into the curse and wherever the curse comes from. And of course, there's a young lady named Jessie. And Jessie described on her sickbed as she died in Scotland, a ship going down and a man named Wally playing a fiddle. And of course, you've heard the story of the band on the Titanic.
Right, right.
That stood on the deck playing.
On the run, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That as the ship went down. And of course, the violin player in the Titanic, one Wallace Hartley.
Bum, bum, bum.
And now you know the curse of the story. Mine are, is this three or two?
Yeah, good that's, Lord. That's number three. But
number three.
How has that been debunked, though?
Well, that's the thing. It's an urban legend. You can't necessarily debunk it, but you can prove that, for instance, the no Pope is not actually true because the number wasn't there. And of course, you can have whatever metaphysical opinions you have about whether the christening of a ship means that it is or isn't blessed by the gods of the ocean or any gods anywhere. But I think what it really comes down to is people have built up this mythology, these legends, this snowballing effect of somehow this event echoed forward and backward in time. And people, I mean, 100 years later, it's like it was the number one selling movie in the entire universe forever and ever and ever. And then, of course, something showed up with the blue rabbit people. But
the
it's one of those
rabbit people.
Yeah, you know, what's that movie called? Abattoir.
Who framed Roger Rabbit?
The Smurfs.
Yeah, Abattoir, The Last Airbender. But
oh, okay.
The thing about it is, and the thing that's really fascinating about all of these types of myths and these types of legends is people hear things and they sound like they should be true.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, well, you know, it would make this just a little better as if I tweak this story just a little bit. And it becomes just this massive ball of truthiness and it gets carried down. I mean, you can't really debunk whether or not a girl had a deathbed premonition of the ship going down and seeing Wallace playing the violin. It may be true. It may be 165% true because inexplicable things like this happen all the freaking time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why they call her whole boat. because she just like fell backwards and started screaming, "Whole boat, whole boat!" And then later on in the Titanic, they're like, "Hold the boat!"
And for the rest of her life, that's all she could say was "Whole boat."
She could say, yeah.
She used to carry her brother around. His name was Bran McMuffin.
Yeah. Yep. Rodrigo, what do you have for your number three?
My number three is a place in Ohio.
Okay.
Oh, that's a terrible urban legend.
Yeah. There's no such thing as Ohio.
Oh, it's like Lemuria, only yeah. with
every time I hear about a place in Ohio, I quietly shiver.
Yeah. Ohio sank into the sea way back in the day.
Lost continent of Ohio.
Which is crazy because it's landlocked.
and did they come, the 12? A farmer? Yeah. A duck?
So there's this bridge in Fremont, Ohio, where supposedly an unwed mother who could not take care of her child threw the child over the bridge.
Mm.
And now when people drive by, they can hear a baby crying.
Oh, no.
Ooh,
have you driven across the bridge, Rodrigo?
I have not. This is in northern Ohio.
Oh, okay.
Which I very rarely make it out to. It's like, I want to say it's like between Toledo and some other place. And whoever needs to go to Toledo?
Nobody. Nobody good.
Max Klinger.
Yeah. So it's between Toledo and where Ted Mosby lives, I think.
Yeah.
This is like, it's nice because it's like, I basically learned about this specifically because every once in a while the urban legend or ghost story or stuff mm-hmm. comes up in conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, "Oh, so you used to live in Ohio. Are there any good ones there?" And it's like, the answer is no. There actually aren't very many good urban legends in Ohio. But, you know, this is one, like, this is a pretty solid one, right? It's got all the elements. It's like a creepy place that's out of the way, a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a remorseful thing. Sometimes they say that you can also see the mother.
Yeah.
And
when your car gets to the other side of the bridge, there's pacifier marks all over the car.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You look back and there's one of those yellow baby on board stickers. Like, oh, no. It's
now, is this the thing where if you park your car on the bridge and walk away and leave your car locked on the bridge, and come back to your car will be running and there'll be dusty child's footprints all over the car?
No. I don't know about one. That one.
That's a different
that's
one.
That's like the crybaby bridge story.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's Ohio or if
no,
it's
there's another
else.
One. I think it's in Kentucky. There's a lot of places that have this where you put your car in park, like on a railroad track, and then you put it in neutral and then take your hands off and then your car will move off the track mysteriously. And when you get out, you will see these little like child fingerprints on the back of the car because apparently there was a train that smashed into a bus that had stalled on the tracks and killed a bunch of kids.
Now this is one where you're supposed to lock the car and take a spare set of keys, but when you come back, your car will be running and there will be baby footprints all over the car.
Hmm.
And this is like one.
Which is crazy. It's crazy because the baby was supposedly like way too young. It was like a little tiny baby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like this is like how these like urban legends kind of spiral out of control. It's like,
yeah.
And then like if you leave your car there will be like an empty Taco Bell bag in there.
Wait,
and it's like, okay. Was this a baby or like my stoner cousin?
Yeah, it's like, hey, Matthew, tomorrow night I want you to come out here to Hayes. And I want you to park on 41st Street. Leave your car undone and make sure you leave $50 in the ashtray. And I need you to walk at least a mile away from the car. Uh-huh. And then when you come back, that $50 will be mysteriously vanished.
Okay.
And so will your car radio.
You know, the other thing about this one is like, you can see a lot of ways in which this could be an obvious thing, right? It's a bridge, so it might be creaky, so it might just sound like that, especially. Mm-hmm. If you have your windows pulled up and you're driving through,
yeah,
you know, again, wind or bridges are like natural places for like wind to rush through. If the creek is low or whatever. Yeah, there's just like a thousand things that this could be.
You know, you've been on, I don't know if this is a metal bridge where it has metal grates instead of concrete or something, but you know, that'll make a sound as you're driving over concrete, different kind of concrete, and asphalt will make different sounds. And sometimes it's a high pitched sound that could be mistaken.
Sometimes your bridge actually is just haunted, but it's not haunted by like a dead baby. It's haunted by like a chicken, or I had actually a house that was haunted by a squirrel.
Yeah.
So like it would come in and would steal all the nuts
in the middle of the night.
In the middle of the night, it'd be like.
Like Robert Goulet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Robert Goulet.
All right. So that it's interesting we're talking about that because my number two is not Robert Goulet, but it is seeing a modern evolution of an urban legend. And it is the Slender Man. And I know a lot of people freak out about Slender Man. But Slender Man was actually created. Slender Man was created as an internet meme in 2009 on a thread on a website called the Something Awful Internet Forum. And this guy had photoshopped a bunch of stuff and put in this guy that's really, really thin and tall, white face. You can't even see his face. These unimaginably long arms. And basically put captions underneath them saying, hey, the person who took this photograph was never seen again. These children were never seen again. So the Slender Man becomes this kind of a modern day boogeyman that goes out and abducts people or kidnaps people and kills children in the middle of the night. And it's really kind of fascinating because this caught on and people have added on and added on and added on to this urban legend to the point where people really legitimately freak out when you say the word Slender Man.
You said it.
And it's to the point where, you know, this urban legend has become so, and this is the sad part of the story, the urban legend has grown so much that, was it like 2 years ago, these two girls really believed in the Slender Man and they tried to kill a friend of theirs. They stabbed her multiple times, or girl was stabbed to death, and they tried to blame it on the Slender Man because they're like, if we didn't make the sacrifice to the Slender Man, he was going to take us. And that's a real story that came out of this. But it's fascinating to see that in this modern time, over the course of 5 years, we can watch the Slender Man. And I remember being still working at the university when this first popped up and just being fascinated with it. It was like, oh my gosh, look at what people are doing with this. And we're seeing this urban legend grow. And so we're actually able to track the origins and the growth of an urban legend over time. And I just find it fascinating. And that's why Slender Man is my number two on the urban legends list.
Wow.
Yeah. Matthew, what do you have for number two? Is it also Slender Man?
God, no. I find that to be creepy as hell.
Really? How come?
I mean, Slender Man is really great because it hits all those tropes, right?
Yeah.
All of the things that we already know about fictional or, you know, supposedly real monsters, Slender Man has really come to embody. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great. It's great writing, basically.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, people have built it up into this big folklore thing that goes back to, you know, Europe and all that. Right, it's just fascinating to read.
There's one image that takes place on a playground.
That's one of the original images.
That playground either is or is a dead ringer for the school playground with which I grew up.
Yeah, most playgrounds look alike, so yeah.
I understand that. I'm just telling you that it creeps me right the out. I mean, it makes me want to say bad words, and I don't do that.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's creepy when you see the original two photographs and then you see how people have built on to that over time. It's fascinating. I'm just truly fascinated by the Slender Man. So, Matthew, what do you have for your number two?
My number two is, however, a modern legend from the computer age.
Okay.
And supposedly it started in the late 1990s on a website called coinop.org.
Okay.
Where they start talking about a legendary video game called Polybius.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I've heard this one. Yeah.
And Polybius, the people, of course, are like, well, we have pictures of it and we have these texts and we have these things. But supposedly in the 1980s, early, like Space Invaders early, like, you know, Pac-Man early in the video game console trend, Polybius appeared in like Oregon. And people were really, really in love with Polybius. It was super popular, but they found that the machines were visited by these strange men in black, like the literal, the men in black of lore, and that the machines started having strange effects on the players, and they'd start to lose their memory, and they couldn't sleep, and they'd flip out, and some of them refused to ever play video games again. And one of them supposedly became a high-profile anti-gamer activist who wanted all video games banned. And this company supposedly has this strange fake German name that means sensory deprivation. And so the legend of Polybius states that this game supposedly was in the test markets, and somebody or something created it to try and find out what was going on. And of course, it disappeared as quickly as it arrived, and only the old school gamers ever remembered it. But it's super creepy. Yeah. It is an uber creepy story. And it's one of those stories, I wish we would stop recording these scary shows when I'm home alone in the middle of the freaking night.
They don't have to be scary.
I'm scared.
Well, I'm glad you are. Whoa.
Oh, scary. But the story of Polybius basically says that someone or something took advantage of that video game trend to either control or try to control the human brain.
Yeah, there is
and whoever they were or whatever they were may or may not have been entirely human.
There is a podcast called the No Sleep Podcast, which is a horror audio podcast where tell stories. And I believe one not too long ago, they did their own take on the Polybius video game that had a very disturbing tone to it. That's maybe a couple of years ago, but if people want to hear that story, I think it is the No Sleep Podcast is where I heard it. Cause that's the main horror podcast that I listen to.
Mm-hmm. I know really that the way that I actually came in over this was Grant Morrison.
Mm, okay.
Cause there's an issue of Batman Inc. where Polybius appears in the background, and I'm like, why do I know that name? And I went and I'm like, oh yeah, it's this thing. And then I started, you know, falling down the rabbit hole. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it's just one of those fascinating stories where you're just like, this is so creepy. I hope it's true, and I hope it's not true. Yeah. And I never want to, I'm going to lock all the doors.
If you don't like my number two, it's Slender Man. You're not going to want to listen to my number one. But before we get to that, we have to listen to Rodrigo's number two. Blah, blah, kids.
Scary stuff. Ooh, Count Floyd's House of Slave Chicks.
So as I've, frightening. So as I've, as I stated before, you know, these conversations crop up and it's like, oh, is there anything in Ohio? It's like, no. So of course I've lived in Ohio. I lived in Kansas. So people are like, well, what about Kansas? And the answer is also mostly no. Like, Kansans are, like, a weirdly practical people. They're not, like, really prone to superstition. It has to be something pretty massive for Kansans to take notice. What they are into is UFO stuff. But this isn't a UFO thing.
Oh.
This is, and it's something that I know we've talked about before in some podcasts, the Gate to Hell.
Oh, yeah.
In Stahl, Kansas, near Lawrence, Kansas.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
15 so miles. Yeah, this one is great because it kind of continues to evolve. They're like, oh, there's this cemetery and somewhere in there is a hidden staircase that'll take you straight to heck. And also there's like this church where like secret rituals happened. And also there's this pine tree that grew into a tombstone. Like, there was a tombstone and the pine tree grew, like cracked the tombstone out of this grave, right? And people were like, oh, scary times. But also the church and the tree have been torn down, and it's like they were torn down at different points with no explanation given. Supposedly there's like an actual family that owns this place, and they weren't torn down by, you know, they didn't do it themselves. Somebody else did it, right? And it's like, if it wasn't the family trying to keep people out of their property and they're just being like, look, let's just pave over the whole thing and stop all of these kids from from KU coming over and, you know, making out in the
church.
at
the old haunted church.
Yeah, the old haunted church. Like, let's just pay over. If it wasn't them, then why would somebody go through all this trouble? You know, supposedly the locals in Stull have like chased people out. They've trailed people that have been to the cemetery for a while. So, you know, it kind of builds this whole mystique, which also makes sense because I can't imagine that there are too many roads in and out of Stull. You know, I've been to tiny towns in Kansas.
North, south, east, west.
Yeah, exactly. I've been to tiny towns in Kansas and enough of them to know there's usually like four is a high count of roads into a town. You know, usually sometimes. So it's like, oh no, those locals are following us. It's like, they're not.
They're leaving
town. They're going to go do something in the next town over. It's like, yeah. They tracked me for 20 miles. It's like, oh really? Did they turn down something that said, you know,
yeah, last
this,
no, no
this
exit
way to Cloud County? Because that's probably where they were going.
Can I share something with you guys?
Sure. Yeah, you've probably shared it before. Go ahead.
This is a true thing. I used to work in Lawrence, and because the toll road,
believe it or not,
the main road is a toll road, I didn't want to pay the $5 a day. I would take 54th Street, 45th Street, the highway that goes straight through Stull. And I did that for 6 years. And I would go at about 7 o'clock in the morning, so the sun is up, and I would come back about 6 o'clock at night. We did 10-hour shifts. In that time, Sarah and I passed through Stull twice a day, every day, 4 days a week. Mm-hmm. In that time, we never, ever saw a human being out and about during daylight hours. Never. When you drive through at night, there are lights. Sometimes there are people on porches. There are people on the street. There's a little like a fire station. Sometimes you'll see people around. You never see human beings during daylight hours in Stull, Kansas. And so...
Oh, go ahead.
And so, it is forever known in my mind as Salem's Lot. Because, seriously, it is the creepiest thing ever. And I'm not, you know, I'm not the kind of guy who goes, oh, weird, creepy things, oh, I don't seek them out. Sometimes they find me. And sometimes it's fun to be scared, and sometimes it's fun to go, ooh, creepy things have happened. This is not a fun thing. This is one of those things where it started out just weird, and then it became puzzling, and then it really did become disturbing for a while. And now I don't drive through there if I can avoid it. I'll spring the $2 to take the interstate, just because I don't want to go through there and have that moment where my brain goes, once again, no real people. We're all going to die here.
To be fair, I worked in a town called Bunker Hill, Kansas. And which had a population, which has its own stories, but the population was so small in that town that I worked there for 10 years, and usually you don't see people out in the streets because the population is so small, right? It's like everybody's outside of the town farming or still at home, not farming. And it's like, it's really, there's not a population density to the point where you run into people. Most of the people that I ever ran into were not from Bunker Hill, which is, you know, creepy in its own way, I suppose.
Yes. That place is
all right. We are up to our number ones. And Matthew, if you don't like The Legend of Stull, Kansas, my number one is the one that creeps me out, even though I know it's totally not true. And I've investigated this and I've read the origin of this. It still creeps me the heck out. And I almost tried it. I almost tried to take the elevator to another world. So here's how it goes. You have to be you by yourself who gets in an elevator. The building that you get into, the building that has this elevator, has to be 10 stories high with an elevator. Mm-hmm. So
exactly 10 stories or 10 stories?
No, it
or
has
more?
To be at least 10 stories.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay. And it has to have an elevator. Now I'm going to read you the instructions for how to get to the other world. But I don't want anybody to do this because it might actually happen and it might freak you the heck out. And I'm not going to give you the return trip instructions, so you might try this and then you'll be stuck in this other world, right?
What?
So here are the instructions. What? And it gets really scary. So imagine, and I read this weekend that we were going up to Kansas City and we were staying down at the Plaza, what is it, the Hyatt down at the Plaza, or at the Crown Center. Up in Kansas City, which is a tall building. And there is one point in this instructions that when you do get out of an elevator, there is something that looks like this up and around there. So here is the venturing out part. Number one, enter your chosen building and get into the elevator on the first floor alone. Do not proceed if anyone else is in the elevator with you. Press the button for the fourth floor. When the elevator reaches the fourth floor, do not get out. Instead, remain in the elevator and press the button for the second floor. When you reach the second floor, remain in the elevator, press the button for the sixth floor. When you reach the sixth floor, remain in the elevator and press the button for the second floor. When you reach the second floor, remain in the elevator and press the button for the tenth floor. When you reach the elevator to the tenth floor, press the button for the fifth floor. Okay, you got that? When you reach the fifth floor, a young woman may enter the elevator. Do not look at her. Do not speak to her. She is not what she seems. Press the button for the first floor. If the elevator begins ascending to the 10th floor instead of descending to the first, you may proceed. If the elevator descends to the first floor, exit as soon as the door opens. Do not look back. Do not speak. If you reach the 10th floor, you may either choose to get off the elevator or to stay on it. If you choose to get off, if the woman entered the elevator on the fifth floor, she will ask you, "Where are you going?" Do not answer. Do not look at her. You will know whether you have arrived at the other world by one indication and one indication only. The only person present in it is you. Bum, bum, bum. It scares the crap out of me.
I'm not listening anymore.
It scares the crap out of me because it's so easy to press a sequence of buttons.
Mm-hmm.
But it's when you get to step eight and the girl gets on the elevator. Don't speak to her. Don't look at her. She's not what she seems. That's when it's like, oh, crap, what's it mean? This, and then, of course, there's some return instructions, meaning that if you want the things in this other world, when you look out, you will notice like a bright red cross off in the distance. And there's no one else in this world, but the world looks almost like an exact mirror of the one you just left.
Mm-hmm.
If you, and this is the thing that really scares me, because the return trip requires that you do the steps in reverse order. So instead of, you know, 1, 4, 2, 6, 2, 10, 2, you have to do it backwards. 10, 2, 6, mm-hmm. 2, 5, 2, whatever. And if you mess it up, you will be trapped in that other world forever. And then the freaky thing is this girl, you know, what should she do? What's she going to do to you?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing is the apparently if you go into this other world, you really need to make sure you know what elevator you got off on, because you become very disoriented and you may not get back on the same elevator, and you have to get back on the same elevator to make the return trip. And I doesn't matter. Every time I read this story, I start getting all tingly and scared, and it's like, man, I don't want to do this. I almost tried it in the building there in Kansas City.
Mm.
And then I was like, oh my God, this sounds so creepy and scary. What if I get trapped in another world? But there's something about it that makes me want to try. This originally started as a Korean ghost story.
Yeah.
And you can go in and look online about it, and it tells you all about the Korean origins and everything. And there's some video of people that have tried this and some weird things that happen. There's a comic book based on this that gets really weird. But it is an urban legend that still to this day freaks me out and is my number one urban legend. Where were you going to say, Rodrigo?
When you mentioned that it was a Korean legend, I was like, yeah, that sounds like a Korean legend. Mm-hmm. Like, there's something about Korean, especially modern folklore, that is like particularly creepy.
Yeah. Especially the girl, because when you see pictures of people's interpretation of this girl, it mm-hmm. looks like the girl from The Ring.
Sure.
And it's super creepy. Ugh, blah, 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 blah. So every time I get in on an elevator, I'm tempted to do it. And then I always stop myself and go, no, man, there might be a creepy girl that gets on here and steals your soul.
Like what I would be most worried about you doing that would be for the poor random girl that gets on the elevator on the 10th floor or something. That's just going down to the pool. And then you just shatter her eardrum screaming.
Matthew, you want to try it?
Absolutely not.
You can go online. You can do a search for elevator to another world on YouTube, and you can find a bunch of people have done this. There is one that is super creepy, and I'm sure it's staged this way, because I never see the end of it, because I guess the elevator doesn't go, it doesn't ascend when you press the first floor button. It actually goes down.
Right.
But the person is shooting it, and there's actually a girl that gets on the fifth floor, and you can hear the person just going, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, and not pointing the cell phone at the person. And it gets down to the first floor, and the person just walks off at a very, very fast pace. And then that's when the video ends. And it's just like, ah.
Yep.
I don't like this story. I want to watch Steven Universe.
Supposedly, it's an urban legend, Matthew, so there's nothing to be feared of, scared of.
Well, fortunately for me, no buildings in this part of the world are more than 7 stories tall.
Oh, no, there are 10-story buildings there in Topeka.
No, there ain't.
Yep. What do you have for your number one?
Name one.
They're actually just 2 5-story buildings on top of each other.
We're really, really paranoid about 13th floor, so we only have 4 floors, and we just repeat.
Yep.
Well, look, I live in a duplex, and then I work in a building that has 7 floors, so I can't do it. So, you know, I got that going for me, which is nice.
All right. What do you have for your number one?
My number one actually ties into a real experience that I had, and it's an experience that Widget, my daughter, who is now 12, loves to explain to people. And
this
it goes
one time
like this.
My silly dad did this.
Well, it's actually a little more complicated than that. There is a particular song by the Electric Light Orchestra called Fire on High.
Yeah, yeah.
And Fire on High is a song that ELO specifically made featuring a process called backmasking.
Mm-hmm.
Backmasking, for those who don't know, is the process of putting backward messages in your music. For a while, it was believed that you could use it to control people's minds. Ooh.
Or summon the devil.
But the thing about Fire on High is that Fire on High has no lyrics other than the backmask lyrics. And the backmask lyrics are just the drummer saying the music is reversible, but time isn't. Turn back. Turn back.
Right.
And the phrase turn back, when you say it backmask, sounds like Matthew. Matthew.
Oh, does it?
Matthew.
Okay. All right.
So I heard this song for the very first time in the year 1991. I was in a 1977 Dodge Magnum. It was dark. I had one headlight, and I was driving to my mother's house. My mother lives in a city that you may have heard of called Sylvan Grove, Kansas. Mm-hmm. And in that city is the Garden of Eden, which has a dead guy in it.
Oh.
It's a dead guy.
And he's just
and he's
perched
really
there.
Dead.
Yeah, and he's behind
and
some
he's
glass.
Just in a box.
Yeah. By the way, actual real life, honest to goodness, just creepy places.
Yeah, yeah.
The Garden of Eden.
Yep.
Really real. So I'm pulling into Sylvan Grove, Kansas, and I'm listening to ELO, and the song's going dun, 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 doodly, 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 doodly. And then all of a sudden, in my car,
you hear
windows
Matthew.
Down, my music way up, and it's like, Matthew, Matthew, Matthew. And I look up, and the Garden of Eden has angels and devils made of concrete.
Yep.
And it's poorly lit. And you're looking up out of a 1977 Dodge Magnum, and what do you see? But the freaking devil! And you hear this voice, Matthew. You may have had a sandwich, but that's not important right now. I literally nearly died. I very nearly careened into the Garden of Eden and died. I would have exploded. It would have been terrible. Which is why my number one is backmasking. Specifically things like, you know, the hidden messages that are supposed to communicate with you, or remember Paul is dead?
Yeah.
One of the Beatles, Paul McCartney, reputedly, supposedly died in 1969, and most of the evidence is in backwards messages in the Beatles' music.
Yeah. Turn me on, dead man.
Turn me on, dead man. Paul
All
is
right.
dead.
Rodrigo, what do you have for your number
the
one?
The devil. He was right there above my Dodge.
You just had to play him the best song in the world.
Dun, 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 dun. Boodly, 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 boodly. Yeah, it's a great song.
So you guys have experienced the dread of the Crybaby Bridge of Fremont, Ohio.
Yeah.
Yeah. The eerie coincidence of the Escalante Petrified Forest, the downright freakiness of the Hellgate in Stahl, Kansas, but nothing can prepare you for Seattle's haunted soda machine.
What?
So apparently, there is, confusingly, here in Washington, there is a place called Capitol Hill. Just in case you weren't confused enough when somebody says Washington, which Washington they're talking about. So Capitol Hill is kind of this like mall slash kind of the commercial area. Mm-hmm. And there is a old soda machine. Like it has like all the old logos and stuff. And it's just kind of sitting there. Supposedly, none of the people that live there or work there have ever seen anyone restock the machine. And yet, this machine is always stocked. It will frequently vend older cans of things, but also has newer stuff. It has like all the old logos and the buttons. It still works. It still functions perfectly. And it has a button that is just like this like kind of creepy circus looking thing that just says mystery. And if you put in your money and you press it, you will get a random can of something. Supposedly, somebody in on the website Vice tested it, and they got out of that, they put $3 in, and they got a Mountain Dew Whiteout, raspberry flavored Nesty Brisk, Hawaiian Punch, and a Grape Fanta from the mystery button. So it's just like super weird, and it's like, you know, they've gone in and they've interviewed people about it, and either literally everybody in this area is in on it, and don't break character. They're like, because it's just like interviews after interviews of like just kind of exasperated shopkeepers. They're like, seriously, we've never seen anybody go into it. Yeah, I know, I get it. It's super weird, but stop asking. Like, nothing. Like, we don't know what it is. Okay. I don't own it. Nobody's ever seen anybody on it. And like, nobody ever breaks. You know, nobody's like, hey, come here. Actually, it's this guy. Like, nobody knows. But it's this machine that's always stocked. It's just there in the middle of it. And nobody knows how the soda even gets in it. The haunted machine of Seattle.
Now, do you know where this is at?
Yeah. This is near Capitol Hill.
Go to it. Go do it, Rodrigo.
Go do it. Go there.
Go see it. Take pictures
of it. Take the elevator to it.
Take the videos.
Do the elevator trick, then go to the machine, and you'll see the guy stalking it.
Yeah, that's probably right.
And he'll be saying,
Matthew.
No, he won't be saying anything. He'll just turn to me, and then my radio will be like, Rodrigo, Rodrigo.
Burn suit.
Or Digor.
When you backmask Rodrigo, it's actually... $7 sushi plate.
Blue plate special.
Have you guys seen, I forget which band it is. This is something that's popped up in the radar in the last couple of weeks, but probably months and months and months ago, depending on when you're listening to this. But there's a band that if you look at, I mean, it's not backmasking, but it's a band that has encoded. If you look at the waveform or the spectral analysis of the track, it's got messages written in the spectral analysis.
Famously, what's like Aphex Twin, who's a techno guy.
Mm-hmm.
He has a track that part of it is just this like weird nonsense noise, and it's like grating. Mm-hmm. It's like, brow. And then if you look at it in a, what would that be, like a spectrometer?
No. Yeah.
Well, yeah, something like that.
Waveform.
Waveform thing. It like, it makes his face.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's super weird.
That is neat. All right, everybody. There you go. Urban legends. Some are funny, like whale sperm that makes the ocean salty.
I really wish you'd reversed your order.
Haunted to haunted soda machines in Capital City. All right. Now is the fun part of the episode. Fun part of the episode. This is where our listeners send us suggestions to podcast@majorspoilers.com. But before they do that, they head over to majorspoilers.com, and in the comment section for this very episode, they list their top five urban legends. Doesn't have to be scary story stuff, just urban legend stuff. Stuff you would find on Snopes kind of stuff. Top five urban legends. I want to read them. Matthew doesn't want to read them because he's home alone.
Oh, I
and,
do.
And Macaulay Culkin is knocking on the door. And Rodrigo definitely wants to read your urban legends. Why? Because everybody loves a list.
You guys just go ahead and do top five. I'll just come back once you cool down.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.